Welcome to The Cosmic Connection, presented by Astrology Hub. I'm your host, Amanda Poole Walsh, founder of Astrology Hub, here with master astrologer Rick Merlin Levine. This is your place to explore the order and beauty of the cosmos and your connection to it all.
All right. Hello, Rick, and hello, everyone.
Amanda, you look different today.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a tan and let my hair get a little curlier and grew a beard.
Those hormones sure kick in fast.
Oh, man, don't they? Oh, that's hilarious. Thank you, everyone, for being here with me today. If you don't know me, my name is Joe G. I am an astrologer and musician, and also I work here at Astrology Hub in the graphics and pretty things team. And of course, with me, Rick Levine. I think I don't need to introduce Rick. So today we're doing our May forecast, which I'm super stoked for. This is the first forecast that I'm doing with Rick. It feels like such a huge privilege, like shaking up a bit. But I'm out here, Rick is out here, and we're about to learn a lot, I think.
I've been out here all my life, Joe, just for the record. Hey, Allie, nice to see you. I missed you last month. Guys, I know you were there, but I couldn't see you. Anyhow, hi.
Nice. Well, speaking of learning, we all will be doing some learning very soon with your course that's coming up, the Chart Reading Extravaganza Part 2. This is the timing section, which I'm so excited because I didn't get to see the first one because I wasn't there. And this time around, I think I'm actually going to be hosting it with you, which is, feels like wild. So, yeah, what are you excited about?
People who don't know what you're talking about, let me step in and clarify. And that is beginning next Thursday, 1 week from today, we will have no program called The Cosmic Connection. However, we will have a different form of Cosmic Connection for 4 weeks. And that will be this program that we're calling Horoscope Reading Extravaganza, of which we did one last fall. People loved it so much, we're doing it again, but we're doing it differently. Because last fall, we focused on reading charts, on delineating and analyzing a natal chart. And this run is going to be focused on transits, secondary progressions, solar arc directions, a little bit of solar returns, a little bit of profections. But we're going to mostly stick to the tools that I use the most in my client work, which are transits, progressions, and directions. And so we're going to each Thursday afternoon at 5:30, different time, a little bit later than we normally do the Cosmic Connection. We'll be doing a two-hour class each Thursday afternoon at 5:30. That's Pacific time. And each week we will have pre-selected two charts. You will know in advance and will be run through the thorough Astrology Hub tech support validation so that we make sure that you have a good camera and decent lighting and so on. All I will have is your name and your chart, and I will run it through the typical preparation that I would do for a client, and I will do that beforehand, whereas the previous ones we kind of just did unfolding in the moment. But what this means is that the various reports and analyses that I do, we will be able to step through them as I unfold the timing in the person's life, and I'll be on camera with the person whose chart it is as a demonstration, and you'll be all out there. It seems like we're all out there today. It must be all the planets in Pisces. But you'll be able to, in the chat box, ask questions and reflect and so on. And so I'm really looking forward to it. 4 weeks, 8 hours of class time, and an additional hour that you'll get upon registration, which is a pre-recorded instruction teaching that I did that's already live, or it's already at the Astrology Hub. So when you register, you will get that, so you can hopefully go through that before the first class if you have time. And also, when you register, you can submit your birth data, and into the hopper it goes, and you may be one of the lucky eight.
Great. And that's honestly so exciting, because that's one of the things that I feel like astrological education sometimes misses, because we get all sorts of chart examples of famous people that you can just go on the Wikipedia and there's their bio. But learning how, especially an astrologer like you, goes through the whole process is golden. And I wish I had that.
As an Aries, Joe, with four planets in Aries and a Gemini rising, I love the timing stuff because it comes and goes, you know, right. And so it's really, I believe it's where the magic of astrology is. It's how does that happen today when I had such and such happen to me, and astrologically this aspect was exact that day. How does that work? I mean, how does any of astrology work? I may be one of the few people in the world, or maybe a handful or so, who actually has delved into the quantum physical realms of understanding how astrology really works underneath the surface. And the truth of the matter is, after some 40 years of research and development on my own part into these questions, I now finally know the mechanism. I know how astrology works. It's magic.
Oh man, magic is real. You heard it here first. Nice. Well, speaking of transits, oh, and yes, I don't know if we told everyone the link. So the link, if you want to sign up for the course, is astrologyhub.com/timing.
Yes, that is in the screen below. And one more thing, and that is, if you are a member of the Astrology Hub Inner Circle, or if you are a Patreon subscriber of mine in my Patreon, you have a code. If you don't have that code, send me an email or ask on my Patreon if you are a Patreon subscriber. In either case, for both Inner Circle members and my Patreon subscribers, supporters, you'll get a 20% discount. It's already priced affordably at $97 for the 8 hours of live class if you can't make it, or even if you can, they go into your library on Astrology Hub, so you can watch them and review them or review them at any time. And on top of that, there'll be some cool handouts of timing techniques. And sorry about that. I have no. That was a spam. That was a spam Skype call that I never get.
It happens.
Anyhow.
Close to Uranus, it's doing its
thing. That's right. Yeah. but at any rate, if you are an Inner Circle member or an astrology or a Patreon subscriber of mine, you'll get an additional 20% off, which brings it down to $77. There's some handouts. There'll be transcriptions of everything if you're into reading. There'll be transcriptions of each of the sessions, and there'll be some surprise other added benefits that you'll get. So it's cool. I hope to see as many of you there as you can. Registration is open now. So don't wait.
Right. See everyone there. Hopefully. All right. So speaking of transits, let's get to the forecast, shall we?
All right. So here we are rolling into May. May is an action-packed month. We've dubbed May, we've formally titled it The Changing of the Guards, which is not the changing of the gods, but of course, an authority figure as a guard, maybe a god of some sort. But you know, it's Jupiter is the planet that guards Earth. This is something that many of us don't think about, that, you know, we think Saturn is the heavyweight, Saturn is Sirius, Saturn was the outward limit, it's as far as we could see before we had telescopes. Saturn is like the badass planet. It is like, you know, but without Jupiter, Earth probably wouldn't have life. And the reason for that is that Jupiter is like, it's like the solar system's great attractor. Anything that comes into the solar system heading toward Earth, like, Caroline says, Jupiter takes the hits. The hits keep on coming because things come into the solar system, whether they're asteroids or whether they're exoplanets, which we now know there are things that are planets that don't seem to be tied to any star, which is kind of crazy. But as these things come in toward Earth, because Jupiter is so, so large, I mean, it's so big, so big that its gravitational pull pulls most things that would be coming toward Earth into it, and they either get trapped as a satellite or they actually get pulled into Jupiter. It's almost like Jupiter is a hungry planet that needs to eat asteroids and comets and errantly moving things that are seem to be on their own. So Jupiter is our guard. Jupiter guards the Earth, and Jupiter is changing signs from Pisces into Aries. And we have here an interesting little lesson about Jupiter, because Jupiter is just under a 12-year, we call it a 12-year cycle. It's actually 11, I always say 11.9, but I just had coffee with Brett, with Gemini Brett. We're here at the OPA conference in Tucson, and I said something about the 11.9-year cycle of Jupiter, and he said, actually, it's 11.887. years. Point being that over longer period of times that matters. And because of Jupiter's direct retrograde, direct motion, Jupiter often doesn't spend a full year in a sign. And in fact, 2022 is a very unusual year because we began the year with Jupiter in Aquarius, having already been into Pisces, retrograded back into Aquarius, and then moved into Pisces and whizzed through the last it was through Pisces so fast that it really was only there for like 4 months or something, 4 or 5 months. And in May, Jupiter moves from Pisces into Aries. And this is the god that's changing. Jupiter and Pisces, especially through the month of April, has just been this watery kind of sometimes confusing. It's been without boundaries, because in the ocean, anyone who's done any diving knows that once you're in the ocean, there are no boundaries. Anything in the ocean can all of a sudden be in your face, so to speak. And so with Jupiter and Neptune and the Sun and Mercury and Venus and the moon all having taken turns moving through Pisces, we're coming out of a very deep dive emotionally. Compassionate sensitivity has been high. But once that Jupiter moves from, once it moves from Pisces into Aries, I think we're going to notice this pretty pretty directly. I think it's going to be a hard one to miss. And that Jupiter actually moves into Aries on May 10th. And so most of the month we'll have Jupiter in Aries. And another piece here that is, I think, quite significant is that we all know that we had this amazing Neptune or Jupiter-Neptune conjunction back on April 12th. And for those of you who listened to the Cosmic Connections last month, I referred to that Jupiter-Neptune conjunction in Pisces not as the elephant in the room that people weren't talking about. Although they were talking about it, they were only talking about the upper, the hopeful, the positive, the dreamy, the creative, the imaginative. I mean, Neptune and Jupiter are both up and out. They're both expansive in kind of an oddly yin kind of a way. I know that's a contradiction in terms, but they're both in a way considered to be, or at least Jupiter, certainly a positive energy. And so people have been writing about and talking about all this amazing positive stuff that was kind of under the beams of this incredibly profoundly powerful Jupiter-Neptune conjunction. So because often people get so excited about Jupiter in particular, and especially Jupiter in Sagittarius or Sagittarius, I've kind of dubbed Sagittarius as the sign that doesn't cast a shadow. Now, I say that tongue in cheek, because obviously it does, but it's a very important thing that Jupiter-Neptune has a very dark side that we tend to ignore because the upside is so cool. And I would say even just the awareness of what's been happening between Russia and Ukraine is just like one piece of that dark underbelly of this totally uplifting magical conjunction. But we also had during April Venus coming up and joining that Jupiter and Neptune conjunction, which has kept that alive. And so I've called this elephant in the room a psychedelic elephant because it's in Neptune. I mean, it's in Neptune. It's in Pisces, and Neptune is there and Jupiter's expanding it. So there's certainly this kind of like dreamy, imaginative, mind expanding psychedelic, if you will. And I've shortened it to call it the psychedelephant. And in fact, Amanda and a few other people last month, we named the psychedelephant as Gertie. But what we have now is going into May, even though the conjunction happened several weeks ago, back on April 12th, because Venus has made the conjunctions with both Jupiter and Neptune, Mars has still to come in to the equation. And Mars will make the conjunction with Neptune first, because Jupiter has already conjoined Neptune and is now moving faster. And so Jupiter will actually join Neptune first on May 17th. But Mars will join Neptune on May 17th, but Jupiter will already be on into Aries. Then some people will say, well, that Jupiter-Neptune thing is really therefore done. And I say that until Mars joins up with Neptune on May 17th, and then when Mars moves into Aries on May 24th, it joins up with Jupiter at just 3 degrees of Aries at the end of the month on May 29th. So I don't think we're going to be out of the water completely, even though we're going to get this incredible blast of energy from Mars moving into its home sign Aries and joining up with Jupiter there. It's going to be very intense, very powerful. And I think May as a whole has just a tremendous amount of energy pushing forward. We have the second eclipse that we'll get to in a moment. And we also have Mercury turning retrograde. Pluto has just turned retrograde. This is a very powerful month.
Right. That's something that I wanted to ask you about, actually, because we're having the Jupiter-Venus conjunction happening just this...
At the new moon, at the eclipse, it's exact.
Right. And then right after we have the Jupiter-Mars conjunction. And I was wondering, how would you describe the contrast of Jupiter-Mars and Jupiter-Venus, since we're now stepping into Jupiter-Venus and leading us towards Jupiter-Mars?
Well, it's interesting, Joe, because normally I would describe Jupiter-Venus and Jupiter-Mars similarly, but with a couple of caveats. In other words, in each case, Jupiter is the magnifying lens that is expanding the planet. Now, Venus and Jupiter together is yummy. This is a conjunction of the two benefics, the greater benefic Jupiter, the lesser benefic Venus. And so this is, too much of a good thing is not a good thing, and that we need to keep in mind. But this is a lovely conjunction, or at least arguably it can be quite kind. But it's expansive. And when Mars lines up with Jupiter, it's also expansive, but it expands us physically rather than emotionally. So rather than getting pleasure and sweetness and money, instead we become more physically engaged. We become more active. We become enthusiastic. It's more of a sporting event that we can kind of conjure up this positive energy. And in fact, I would suggest that we will have more physical energy than we normally do. Whereas the Venus Jupiter is just it's more indulgent, you know. So right. At the Mars Jupiter, basically we're having a second glass of wine and we're eating chocolate. You know, at the Mars, that's at the Venus Jupiter. At the Mars Jupiter, you know, we're playing football with our friends, or we're going out for a weekend of hiking, or, you know, we're doing things that are physical. Now, that would be normally the difference, but there's an important other piece here. And that is that Venus conjuncts Jupiter while Jupiter is in its domicile in traditional astrology, and while Venus is exalted. when Venus is not at home in Taurus or Libra, there is no place else in the zodiac it would rather be than Pisces. Right. Because Venus in Pisces is sweet and yummy, and it feels like Angora fur, not that you necessarily, you know, need to harm a rabbit to make something as soft as Angora fur. But Venus is just lovely in Pisces, and Jupiter's alignment makes it even more so. But now we have Jupiter in Aries, which is no longer in its domicile, and we have then Venus, which is not what we're looking at all here. We're now looking at Mars, and what happens is that we now have Mars in its rulership. Mars is in its domicile. So we can expect that Mars to take on much more of a warrior type energy, and so so we'll see, but it'll be interesting to see how in fact that all plays out.
Right. Will Mars already be in Aries by the time we get to the Scorpio full moon eclipse? Will it still be in Pisces?
No, it won't be. The Scorpio full moon eclipse occurs on May 15th.
Right.
And so Mars doesn't move into Aries until Jupiter's moved into Aries, but Mars doesn't move into Aries until the 24th. So no, it will not be.
Right. And now that we've gone into eclipses, I think I kind of jumped the gun a bit. But how are you feeling about these series of eclipses? I know that the one starting right now is really still April, but it very much colors all of May because it's the very beginning of it all.
How are you feeling about that? Well, it's interesting you said that, Joe, because for the last few months, I've said the most important event of the month was the lunation that happened the first or second of the next month.
Right.
This is just the opposite, because the most important event of the month may be the lunation that happened the day before the month began. I think sometimes we put too much weight onto eclipses in general. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they are unimportant. I know that was kind of a double negative. Eclipses are important, but so are all lunations. Every new moon and full moon is significant. And sometimes I think we put more weight onto an eclipse. And I've seen historically, both in personal consultations, people that I know who follow their own charts and or mundane astrology in as they look at predictions or forecasting, it seems that often eclipses disappoint. From a standpoint of performance, often they don't bring home the power of what is given to them. Now, again, don't read me wrong. I'm not suggesting that we should avoid looking at them or talking about them. And I think that if we look at this April 30th eclipse, the new moon eclipse in Taurus, solar eclipse in Taurus, I think what that does is a couple of things. When we look at a lunation or an eclipse, what we look at is what aspects is the eclipse making to other planets. And this one is actually making a sextile to Mars is its closest aspect. Mars being at 12 degrees of Pisces and this eclipse being at 10 degrees of Taurus. So the eclipse is coming into its sextile with Mars, which I think is very powerful and very important. What does it mean? This gets trickier. I mean, is this a good day for war? It's Mars and the sun, you know. And of course, the midpoint of that Mars and sun turns out to be the wounded healer Chiron in mid Aries. So I think that this is a significant thing But remember, when we look at Mars the warrior and we put Mars in Pisces, Mars isn't interested in Pisces necessarily in going off and starting a war. It's unless it's a war over the importance of one's convictions, imagination, or spirit. In fact, I would call Mars in Pisces the spiritual warrior. And from that standpoint, I see this eclipse as being very important for those people who are fighting for a higher cause. Now, we have to be careful here because not only is Mars fighting for a higher cause, but Mars is in Pisces where it can get confused as to what that higher cause is, and it's coming into that conjunction with Neptune. And so Mars is a bit, you know, dazed and confused by what's going on and what it should do. It can have the beliefs and the ideas and the convictions and the moral direction and still not know what to do about it, which I think has been the case, at least looking at the, you know, Russian-Ukrainian war. But I'm talking also about personal relationships and so on. It's hard to say whether this is going to be a heightening of awareness and compassion and all of those things, or whether it's simply going to increase the intensity of the current war that's going on. But the other thing is also very important, two other things actually. One of them is that this eclipse is also conjunct Uranus. Now, it's 4 degrees away from its actual conjunction, which means that 4 days roughly after the eclipse, actually on May 5th, so it's almost 5.5, almost 6 days away, the sun will actually catch up with Uranus. So the eclipse in some ways is a harbinger of the annual Sun-Uranus conjunction, which in a way gives an intensity to that unexpected change that Uranus is often involved with, the unexpected, the unconventional, that which is out of the box. And the moon actually makes its conjunction with Uranus 8 hours after the actual eclipse. So this is very empowering. It's very important. This eclipse in many ways is a Uranian eclipse, but it's in Taurus. And of course, in Taurus, Taurus don't like those changes, you know, and yet here the lightning is striking rather hard, and I don't think we're going to be able to avoid them. The last thing I want to mention about the eclipse, although we've already mentioned it, is that on the day of the eclipse, we also have the exact or the perfection of the Venus-Jupiter conjunction, and they are sextile to Pluto, and so they're not lightweights in this at all. And so we might see some good come out of it. What actually happens, we'll just have to wait and see. Now, we don't get paid when we do these, Joe. The clock stops when we're talking about another month. So we need to come back to May, because otherwise we're just not going to do well during this at all.
I did have a question about the Sun-Uranus situation, because it seems like the outer planets are getting really busy in the whole eclipse thing. And my question was, is there like a particular event in the past during like a Sun-Uranus conjunction that you can remember that was very telling, and maybe like how you or somebody who went through that event kind of navigated through that? Because I saw in the comments a couple of people asking like, what should we do? So maybe if we take a look at a story from the past, you can get some insight into what we can do.
I'm an Aries who lives in the present moment. I can't remember anything that's happened in my life prior to breakfast today. No, not completely true. As you know, I do have a Cancer moon and I love the historical aspect of it, but I'm not very good with the personal historical aspect of it. And I honestly don't have a sense of the Sun-Uranus conjunction. Well, I do, maybe as a little bit of an aside, the fact that 6.5 years ago or so, Uranus in the sky was moving through mid-Aries. Now, that's a bit different, but Uranus in the sky was conjoining my natal sun. And that was right around the time when I lost my dear friend and astrology cohort partner, Jeff Jauer, to lung cancer. And that was a tremendous loss in my life. And I don't think that Uranus is always about loss. I mean, from a personal standpoint, although I miss that sucker every day of my life, I mean, he was like my brother. Many of you already know, those of you who have been, you know, on my trail for more than a few years, know that Jeff was actually born the real same day, same year as my real older brother. So, but the fact that Uranus often creates events that are not easy and not healthy, the loss of Jeff also catapulted me into thinking and living my life of, what am I going to do? And you see, here's what how Uranus works. Uranus often changes one's situation that catapults one's life into having to get it together or having to deal with something, whether it's tragic or not. You know, there also can be, you know, the whole idea of winning the Nobel Prize or having something totally magical happen. But in all cases, Uranus is not what you expect. And yet it alters things that gives you more freedom and more awareness than you had prior to the transit. So this eclipse being in Taurus, first of all, I would say that you have to look at what this 10 to 15, 10 to 14 and a half degrees of Taurus does in your chart. Where does it fall? Falls in my 12th house. What house does it fall in your natal chart? What aspects does it make? Well, I have a 16 degree Cancer moon. It's a little bit wide, but it sextiles my moon. Okay, cool. It doesn't make much other connection to planets in my chart. Now, if you have a planet that is either mid or early mid Taurus, or I say early mid, I mean that, you know, let's say, you know, 9 to 15 degrees of Taurus, or 9 to 15 degrees of Scorpio, or square at 9 to 15 degrees of Aquarius or of Leo, or even trine, or if you have another planet, or even an ascendant or midheaven, then this eclipse has a little bit of your name on it. It's carrying your energy. And so there can be more of a direct response in your own chart. So what this means is, I think it's, the important thing is to understand that when things happen under Uranus influence, the worst thing we can do is try to bury it. The worst thing we can try to do is go into denial. The worst thing we can do is make believe it didn't happen and go on with our life. The best thing we can do, regardless of how exciting and or painful whatever happens, if something happens, is to integrate that energy and to dance with it. When we were talking, I think last week on the Cosmic Connection, I used this image, and I'm going to be doing this a lot in the timing stuff as we look at through the month of May. And that is, in the West, when something happens, we live kind of like in the paradigm of Western boxing. And Western boxing is built on the idea of what's called block and parry. Block, you know, hit, block the punch. Parry means bring in your own punch. Block and parry. Now, this is contrasted with many of the martial arts from the East. And I think the best example of what I'm saying here is Aikido. And Aikido, if you get an incoming punch, it's like, thank you, God. Why? Because that incoming punch has its own energy that doesn't cost you energy to make. And so you take the energy of that and you dance with it and you let it ripple through your system and out the other side. And so instead of blocking and hitting, you're actually engaging in the motion, which leaves you energized. And I think that if we keep that metaphor of Aikido, rather than boxing, I think we do much better with aspects, especially those of the outer planets, and I would say Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. So that's my thought there.
Right. And my thought about that is, if we're talking about Uranus and this idea of things being very unexpected and trying to dance with Uranus, what sort of dance would that be? I know it's a silly question, but it can, I think it can really help illustrate the kind of moves that we're going to be
playing. It's not a silly question at all, Joe. And the answer is movement. that the thing that makes the lightning of Uranus strike harder is being stuck in anything. You got some emotion, some feeling, something stuck in your big toe, Uranus is going to come along and blast it out. Now, that doesn't mean that an eclipse conjunct Uranus is going to impact everyone. Not everyone on the planet's going to have, you know, an awakening the same day. And for that matter, even with, you know, stronger aspects, we live in a world where we all get timing things differently. We all come from different energetic traditions or histories, maybe is a better word. And so from that standpoint, I don't want to overplay the power of this eclipse, which by the time we get to May is going to be in the past, other than May is a movement into new territory. May is a changing of the guard, and the guard not only being Jupiter moving into Aries, where it's going to be engaged and it's going to be, it's not at home. Remember, Jupiter was at home in Pisces, but sometimes being at home kind of makes us powerful and lazy. In Aries, Jupiter is going to be interactive. Why? Because all planets in Aries become interactive in the moment. Katrina says something which actually brought up something that I've said I would say to a client. I've said many, many times. And what Katrina said, that if the Uranus strike is headed your way, stay loose, move the body, sway, laugh, be the jester and the trickster. I've told way more than one or two or 20 or 50 people as they were approaching some sort of Uranus thing, even if it was 6 months, a year or 2 years away, is practice moving your hips. Now, this can be interpreted as a sexual metaphor, and if that applies, great. But it's not limited to that, because the hips is where we have that physical place where we connect the macrocosm to the microcosm, where we connect the above to the below. The hips become the thing that moves, that keeps energy either stuck down below where we're not dealing with it, or it allows it to connect and move up toward the crown chakra. And so this idea of what Katrina typed is exactly right on. It's keep moving your hips, walk, exercise. Anything that allows the body to move is going to have reactive influence in the metaphysical realm. If you have things in your life that you're absolutely afraid is going to happen, I'm actually absolutely scared that I work for Twitter and I'm afraid that Elon is going to fire me on the first day. If you have things that you're afraid of, whether it's career or relationship or physical issues, play out the worst case scenarios with an emotional detachment. And if it's freaking you out, then do it enough not to become comfortable with it, but so that it doesn't have the emotional charge. Because the whole idea is that Uranus preys, and that's P-R-E-Y, not P-R-A-Y. Uranus preys on emotional, stuck emotional energy. Uranus preys on that which has been suppressed or repressed. And so Uranus is a great way, or Uranus transits, to clear out the underbrush. And I think that's it. But that actually sets the tone for May. Remember, the eclipse happens in April. I want to make money. Let's talk about May.
So, an eclipse that actually happens on May, can we still expect that same sort of Uranus energy throughout the whole eclipse cycle, even up till we get to the lunar eclipse? Or is,
yeah, and for that matter, for the next 6 months until we get to the next pair. Yes. And I think, again, that we've already seen over and over again in recent lunations the importance of Uranus and Pluto, even though their square is in effect long gone, that Uranus, Pluto, and Saturn, Uranus are still playing very heavily and will throughout the month.
Right.
And that, you know, even more so because, okay, so everyone's been talking about Pluto going direct. I'm sorry, direct Pluto going stationary. And that happens right around this eclipse also. And on the eclipse on the 30th, Pluto is already retrograde. But you know, there's a difference between what we learn in the textbooks and what happens in practical reality. On the day of the eclipse, Pluto was at 28 degrees and 35 minutes. 28 degrees and 35 minutes is where it turned retrograde, and that was on April 30th, the last day of April. On the first day of April, Pluto was at 28 degrees Capricorn, 22 minutes, meaning it went less than one quarter of a degree in the entire month of April. And even though we're saying it goes, you know, absolutely stationary retrograde on April 30th, the fact of the matter is that Pluto was at 28 degrees and 35 minutes on April 20th, 10 days before it turned retrograde, it was in the same degree and minute. And after the retrograde motion, Pluto stays at 28 degrees and 35 minutes until May 8th. So we have a period of almost 20 days when Pluto is within 1 minute, 1/60th of a degree. So from that standpoint, I don't give a crap that Pluto turned direct on that or turned retrograde on that day. For all practical purposes, Pluto's been stationary all month of April and remains pretty much stationary throughout the entire month of May. In fact, by May 31st, Pluto is still at 28 degrees Capricorn, but is at 28 degrees Capricorn, 21 minutes, basically back to where it was at the beginning of April. So we have Pluto barely moving a quarter of a degree, 15 minutes of arc in a 2 month period of time. And what that does is that makes a heavyweight Pluto even heavier, because the rough rule of thumb is the slower the planet moves, the more influence, the heavier the weight is, which is why Mercury retrograde it becomes heavier. Now, with Mercury retrograde, Mercury turns retrograde on May 10th, but at the beginning of May, Mercury is already slowing down. Back at the beginning of April, Mercury was moving almost 2 degrees a day, almost twice as fast as the sun. Now, at the beginning of May, it's moving about a degree a day, but it quickly slows down so that by the day it turns retrograde, and it turns retrograde on May 10th, incidentally, the same day that Jupiter moves into Aries. This is like a cosmic trick. You know, this is highest form of irony. Jupiter moves into Aries. Let's go. And Mercury turns direct and goes, no, let's go backwards. Aries doesn't want to go backwards, you know. So there is a bit of irony here. But even Mercury, having moved into Gemini, its own home sign, which just, I think it did that just yesterday or I'm not sure. Mercury moved into Gemini. Yeah, just, I mean, it's just in Gemini. But it turns retrograde on May 10th at 4 degrees and 51 minutes of Gemini. It's at 4 degrees, 50 minutes of Gemini 24 hours earlier. And 24 hours later, it's at 4 degrees and 48 minutes. So it barely moves a few minutes of arc over the course of 48 hours, way faster than Pluto. But still, these retrograde planets have to slow down in order to change signs. Now, with Mercury, we need to go back a few days prior to the recording of this. We were recording this on April 28th. But Mercury moved through 26 degrees of Taurus on May 25th. Why is that important? Because once Mercury turns retrograde at just barely 5 degrees of Gemini on May 10th, between May 10th and June 3rd, Mercury goes retrograde and it backs up all the way to 26 degrees of Taurus, which is where it was on April 25th, which means from April 25th until June 3rd, Mercury will be moving through and then backing up over ground it's already traveled through. And then once it turns direct at 26 degrees of Taurus on June 3rd, it doesn't reach the point at which it turned retrograde until June 18th. And so from April 25th until June 18th, Mercury is in an area of the sky that is an area that it will travel through direct, retrograde, direct. Now, here's how we use this. If you have any planets between 26 Taurus and 5 Gemini, then Mercury is going to contact that planet by conjunction, direct, then retrograde, and then direct. Normally, Mercury lines up with a planet once a year, and it lasts a day, maybe. 2 days, maybe, if we are ready for it, we may feel it a day or two early. But it comes and goes. Mercury is the fleet-footed messenger of the gods. It moves quickly. But if you have a planet between 26 of Taurus and 4 of Gemini, or its opposition point between 26 of Scorpio and 4 or 5 of Sagittarius, or the square points, or the trine points, or the semi-square, if you have points that are sensitive to that range, Mercury is going to make an aspect, set up the event, go retrograde back over it, bring that back into light again, and then the third and final time, it's going to go across for the third time. And so from that standpoint, it makes those transits that Mercury makes with planets that are sensitive to that shadow, what's called the shadow period, the area that it goes through, backwards through, and then direct through again. And that will take us from May 10th all the way through the middle of June. So we're already in the shadow, but that Mercury retrograde from May 10th to June 3rd is the highlighted part. And because it's in Gemini for a good part of that retrograde, that makes it even more significant. We're not going to be able to avoid this one. It's going to be a loud Mercury retrograde.
Right. And do you feel like, especially for the people that don't have planets in those particular degrees, do you feel like the change of signs can and also be very dramatic in the way that things are felt, or not so much?
It can be. I mean, one of the things to consider is do you have your Mercury, or let me put it this way, how is Mercury connected to the other planets in your chart? Because some of us are just highly sensitive to Mercury, and others of us are the Tauruses with a strong Venus and a Mercury buried somewhere. Some of us are way more sensitive to Venus or Mars. And so you have to look at your own chart and go, how much attuned am I to this? But of course, the magic of astrology is that whether we're attuned to a planet or not, we can use astrology and contemplative or meditative practices to attune to that planet, which then gives us the ability to work with that, setting an event up direct, reworking it retrograde, and then as it goes direct to kind of bring it to some sort of fruition and moving it into the future. But I think that not everyone is sensitive to Mercury retrograde. For many years, I used to say, yeah, the only people that, you know, Mercury retrogrades bother are communication wimps. Until I had three or four, you know, cosmic face slappings that said, all right, I'll ease off on that. I'm not going to say that anymore because hard drives do, you know, hard drives do crash, you know, on Mercury retrogrades. And in fact, the two largest single internet outings, both which involved major hubs, Cisco routers going down that turned off an entire area of the country for 6 or 8 hours. Both of those two, the most significant events in 20 years of internet, have both been on the day of a Mercury stationary retrograde.
Wow. Yeah, I have Mercury right by my ascendant. So the Mercury retrograde sometimes can be like so literal and dramatic. Just the last one, I had bought a synthesizer and it was from Sweden. So I had to wait for it on the delivery. And I got it on delivery, but my synthesizer was broken, and I looked at the chart of the moment just to, as an astrologer will do, and I had literally Mercury retrograde right at my western horizon just setting as the delivery driver brought me the broken thing. And the cool thing about that is that because it was broken, I actually got a discount. So when Mercury stationed direct and went past that same degree, I got the synthesizer again, but it was much cheaper than I had paid for it initially. So just thought that that story could maybe illustrate a little bit of the motion.
So here's the deal. We're like pushing an hour and we have yet to start really covering it. Well, no, that's not true. I mean, we've been talking about the month, but there are a few things that I just want to, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't get them onto the recording. So I'd like to do that. I think maybe the most important things are the two lunations and the eclipses or the eclipse. And that is that that second eclipse in this season is going to be the Scorpio full moon eclipse that is on May 15th. It's 9:14 p.m. Pacific time, and it occurs at 25 degrees Scorpio, 18 minutes. And that eclipse is very interesting because it does not grab Uranus. It's actually past the Uranus. It is very close to the node. It's a south node conjunction, the full moon is. But this eclipse at 25 degrees of Scorpio is trine Neptune, which is at just almost 25 degrees of Scorpio. It's actually, 25 degrees of Pisces. So it's at 24 degrees and like 57 minutes, but it's like right there. And so rather than getting the intensity of Uranus, we're now getting the trine from Neptune. We're getting a square to Saturn because Saturn's at 24:55. And so the proximity of the square to Saturn is intense. I mean, it's right there. And I think that's probably the singular most important aspect, which means that there can be some very real structural changes that go, this has gone on long enough, or we need to do this, or our back is against the wall. There's something here that happens at this eclipse with its square to Saturn that is very profound. And then we also are coming into a sextile with Pluto 4 degrees away. But the fact that Uranus is not in the picture at all is quite intriguing. Is quite intriguing to me.
So we have like the first one that's super Uranus, and then the other one super Saturn-y. And we have that same sort of dynamic that we've been sort of playing with for the last little while.
And that's right. And what this is going to remind us of, that, as I said all through last year, even though the third and final Saturn-Uranus square was on Christmas Eve of 2021, that square was not going to be done until after the election of in the United States in 2022, because Saturn will go retrograde next. It falls after Pluto, and it will then become closer and closer to reoccurring that square. It doesn't perfect it, but it comes within nearly a half a degree. So these two eclipses are a perfect setup for the dynamic of Saturn-Uranus, because the first eclipse is conjunct Uranus, the second eclipse is square Saturn. Yep, that says it all.
Right. So do you think it would be wise for us to then think back to what happened on that Christmas, and maybe events could be related or maybe not as much, like a different shade?
Maybe. I think we're almost touching apples and oranges conceptually, meaning that an eclipse square is not the same as a perfected actual Saturn-Uranus square. But the imagery may hold. You may be able to go back all the way to the beginning of 2021 and see some of these issues continuing to develop. And in fact, even just with the Russia crime, I hate to harp on that because I know there's other important things going on in the world too. And I know that that's not the only war going on. And every chance I get to say this, I'm going to remind us that as much camaraderie and or sympathy as many people have for the Ukrainians, and I share that, the Yemenis are getting bombed every day by the Saudi Arabians with our military. you know, with our armaments. And there certainly have been other peoples recently that have suffered the ills of war. But I think even just specifically looking at the Russia-Ukrainian thing, the change of presidential power, and even going back to the beginnings of the Uranus, Saturn-Uranus square back, January of 2021, that in itself played into this whole thing because, and I don't want to go too political, but most people agree that for reasons which may be absolutely justifiable or not, depending upon what side of a political spectrum, you know, you fall on, the fact of the matter is that with Trump in office, there may not have been a Russia-Ukrainian war. Of course, it may be just because we said, here, take Ukraine, you take the, you know, Ukraine. But regardless, I think that the Saturn Uranus square and the message of this month, I think, is tied to that. That's all I want to say there. Right. The other things that are important and then let's take a quick look at the new moon at the end of the month, that the sun moves into Gemini on May 20th. And actually, the retrograde Mercury conjoins the sun on the 21st. So that's a very powerful few days right there. But on the 22nd, Mercury retrogrades back into Taurus, where it stays for the rest of the month. Mars on the 24th moves into Aries. We mentioned some of these earlier, but I just want to put them in chronological sequence now. Mars moves into Aries on May 24th. This is a powerhouse. This is, you know, I think we'll need to be very careful here, not only in our individual lives, but watching the politics of what happens, you know, when we on some level may lose that sense of compassion. And not that there's a lot of compassion going on that I can see. Well, there are in some areas, but that Mars moving into Aries might see things heat up another whole level of the, you know, of the warrior side of Mars in Aries. But then Venus moves into Taurus on May 28th, Venus, which has been in Aries, and Venus gains a lot of power as she moves into Taurus. And so after that period of time and on into June, we have Venus and Mars kind of both in their domiciles. And this is very strong with Mars in Aries and Venus in Taurus. And then by May 29th, we have Mars in Aries catching up with Jupiter. This is the last hit of that psychedelic elephant, which maybe isn't as psychedelic now. It may be a little more reality-based. But remember, Neptune is still hanging out in Pisces. And this leads us up to the Gemini new moon at 4:30 a.m. on May 30th. And this is like the closing, kiss of the month. And this, I think, is also a very interesting new moon, less by what it says than more by what it doesn't say, because this new moon at 9 degrees of Gemini is not connected to Saturn. It's not connected to Neptune. I'm talking here by, you know, traditional aspects. It's not connected to Uranus. It is connected to Pluto by a sesquisquare, but even that you have to stretch. It's not exact, but that is the closest thing that we have. And so I really think that the closing new moon in Gemini is in some ways a statement that we're moving totally in a new direction, that we're really separating ourselves from the past. There are other aspects that are closer. We still are playing with a Mercury trine to Pluto at the Gemini new moon. That Mercury trine Pluto was exact on May 25th. And in fact, the Sun was trine Pluto on May 19th. This is, again, a deepening of the energy. Pluto is still relatively stationary, even though it's retrograde. But by the time we get to that new moon, I think there's all kinds of movement going forward. Look, we have Mercury temporarily back in Taurus, but it's going to turn direct, and then it will quickly move back into Gemini. We have Venus in Taurus. This is new ground. We have Mars in Aries. This is new ground. We have Jupiter in Aries. This is new ground. So I really see us moving forward, but still not escaping the claws or maybe the cage of the Saturn square. To the Saturn square Uranus.
Right. So, and do you think that a huge piece of that is also just, I guess, Jupiter being in Aries and everyone having that intent to really just get things done? And then maybe by the time the new moon comes around, those things are more, a little bit more solidified, less out there in Pisces land. And more out here in the present.
Solidification may not be the word I would use, although we do have Venus in Taurus,
right?
Mercury in Taurus. But, you know, the Gemini Aries energy together, of which I'm a good example of, because I have four planets and the North Node in Aries and Gemini rising with Uranus in Gemini rising, there's nothing solid about that. You know, right. Solidity may come from other areas like Saturn in Aquarius or like some of the planets in Taurus, but it's about movement and it's about directly moving into the new and creating plans that are no longer being thought about. They're being acted upon. That Jupiter in Aries, someone says, hey, you know, there's the situation that's coming up and I want to tell you about it and ask you if you want to join me on this little project. And Jupiter in Aries says, I'm in, let's go. And he said, well, I haven't even told you the project yet. It doesn't matter. I'm ready for something. Let's go. And right. So yet we do have that, especially doubled down because the Mars is also in Aries. So absolutely.
Right. So it's like almost like the seeding of something new, but it's not really sprouting just yet.
Right. And someone is Velma has asked about the technology aspect of Uranus. And those who are fighting 5G and says, will the people win? Ha ha. And I would just say, yeah, ha ha. There's a lot of technology stuff that's going on right now in many directions, 5G being one of them, mass vaccinations, regardless of where you stand on it, is another one. There's so many things. We're not going to untie we're not going to undo the technology that we've invested so much money in to make things the way that some people think they want to be. And although this may be a downer, I would just remind us that often it was advances in technology that brought ends to great civilizations. And what I'm speaking here of very specifically, although you may not think of this as technology, it sure was. And that was the widespread use of what is it when you can mold something? Is it palliative? That's not the right word. There's a word that it's moldable, bendable, shapeable.
Malleable? And,
Malleable. That's the word. Duh. Thank you.
No worries.
Brain fart. Toot toot. All right. So the malleability of lead led the Romans to install these intricate networks of water delivery systems that basically gave everyone lead poisoning, and probably aside from other factors, this added to the dumbing down, the stupidity, the dullness of the brain functions that probably was a strong part of the fall of the Roman Empire. So which of the technology things might that be for us? I'm not going to venture a guess here, because whatever it is that I guess might be it will probably offend someone. And I don't mind defending people, but I don't have time to get into an argument or discussion. And so let's just say, pick your evil. You know, technology when it's not connected to the heart, technology when it's not connected to the body, to the soul, certainly can lead us astray.
Right. Lots of thinking to do about that.
Julie Woolley. I don't know. Said, I wish I could be a fly on the wall for Rick and Brent's conversation. Brent said after we were done, we needed to get back. And Anna, who was there, said, well, you guys probably don't want to stop this conversation. And Brent says, no, Rick and I only have one conversation that basically takes 3 or 4 or 5 months or 6 months hiatus. But as soon as we're together, the exact same conversation begins. And yes, we get to some very interesting places.
Nice. I would love to hear that. You guys have to record it sometime.
Maybe if you guys got on to Amanda, maybe Amanda could have Gemini and Brett and I on for just some special event to just hang out. And
That's fun. An awesome idea. Maybe people can leave it in the comments if they want that to happen. And we'll try to make it happen.
That would be fun.
Nice. Well, I think we're getting to time now. So
I think over time, but yes.
Yeah. If we were to summarize the whole thing in a sentence, other than the title, Changing of the Guards, what would it really be, like the month?
If I had to summarize the entire session that we've just had in one sentence, it would be this. Enroll now.
I mean, but it's actually a very good point.
Extravaganza in the month of May. Your month of May will not be the same without being a participant in this class. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
No, but it's actually such a good point.
I'm sorry, Joe.
Oh, no, I was just saying it is actually such a good point, though, because I think a lot of these things that we talk about, eclipses and the planets doing whatever, it's great to listen to, but until you really learn it and you can just grab a chart and be able to look at it and come up with your own conclusions and your own sort of like meditation of what does this mean to me and what does this mean to the world at large, that's when the magic of astrology really happens. So being this course will really help be aware of that flow and navigate it.
I mean, obviously, we look at a chart and there is a, you know, planet at, you know, 0 or 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 degrees of Aries, we have something to talk about right away. And so and that is the Jupiter. And part of doing the timing things in charts like this is learning how to apply what's going on right now to what we're seeing in the chart. And so from that standpoint, I certainly would like, you know, all of you to join us. But even if you're not, seriously, the important thing about the month of May is that it's taking us into new territory and new places. Arguably, most months do, but this is doing it at a bit of a faster pace. There's a feeling now that we've there's a bit of irony, a good word, cosmic irony, in how fast we appear to be moving forward as the outer planets begin one by one to turn retrograde. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not completely an illusion, but there are changing of energies that are going on now that are quite powerful. And I would say that the most important thing for all of us is to stay aware, you know, and at the risk of repeating myself, which I do often, you know, it's my line that I say so many times, think cosmically, but act locally. You know, it's important to understand the wider parameters around all of this. But if we don't apply it to our individual lives, if we go into denial, if we have something difficult and we're saying, I'm not going to go there, it just didn't happen. The thing about astrology is we can get a more objective view on what is going on. And it becomes incumbent upon each and every one of us to take all this change, the Mercury retrograde, the awareness of things coming back at us, not getting locked into fighting what was maybe already gone on last month, somehow coming round, but flowing with it, cutting ourselves some slack. The eclipse, the second eclipse coming up, and the power, you know, of that transition of Jupiter in Aries, of the inner planets changing signs, of Venus moving into Taurus and actually moving into Gemini by the end of the month. Venus moves, says Venus into Taurus. Oh, but at the beginning of the month, Venus was in Pisces. So Venus whizzes through Aries quite quickly. But all these things are dynamic change, and it's important for us to stay in tune with as much of these dynamic changes as we can.
Right, 100%. Well, do you have any other closing thoughts, or ideas, or anything else that you'd like to say?
I have lots, but
not enough time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Rick, for all the insights. And it's been so much fun to be here with you today and with everyone watching it live as well. Well, guys, thank you so much. I hope you guys have a fantastic eclipse season and move your hips a little bit, you know?
and here's a toast to Jupiter and Aries.
Oh, let's go. All right, guys. Well, thank you, everyone. And we'll see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
If there's one aspect of astrology that really grabs our imagination, it's this idea that you can tell the future by looking at a piece of paper. Master astrologer Rick Levine recently made this observation, and while the idea is compelling, is it actually true? You'll find out in Rick's upcoming course on timing and transits. Learn what astrology can help you predict and how to do it by going to astrologyhub.com/transits. Enrollment closes soon.